It's episode 414 of This Is Whole Life. We're together, and there's only two gathered today to be together to
and
talk
yet
about.
It says we're two or three are gathered, so
we're okay.
We're within the limits, but just barely.
Just barely. Melanie,
we lost over 75% of the intelligence of this
of the podcast
operation right here. Like
Melanie,
Randy,
where are you?
Randy and I make about 25%, and Melanie's the other 75. So,
and we should probably tell people why. And what we're basing that number off of. Because I think we really have to. We all do.
I mean, yeah, it was, you know, we knew she was smarter before, but now I think she's going to have a piece of paper that proves it. So,
yeah. For those that don't know, yesterday, which would be Monday. We're recording on Tuesday. You'll hear this Wednesday. So a mere 2 days ago when you're listening, she successfully defended her dissertation, and the title of which, unless it was right in front of me, I would not be able to remember because it's kind of long and it's on a subject I don't know anything about.
Preaching doubt to a
deconstructed
or
yeah.
Sorry, see, Melody, we told you we were missing 75% of the. So it was. That's so bad. This is so funny.
Yeah.
It's basically how to preach to folks whose faith is deconstructing.
Right.
How to preach to that
group. Oh, here it is. Hold on.
A modern homiletic for. It's not postmodern, metamodern. Yeah, there we go. Metamodern. I knew it would eventually get there.
I thought there was in the. Didn't someone post that in our. Thought somebody posted it here in our Discord. We have a Discord channel for staff, and I would have bet that was in there, but I don't see it. So, hey, we'll take Ken's, and then Melanie can tell you all about it next week.
But she was gracious enough to, and Tim was gracious enough to make sure that there was a Zoom link that some of us who were really interested in listening to her defender thesis got to listen into it. It was really neat. I've never actually seen somebody defend a thesis before, so that was really interesting to watch. And Melanie crushed it, and you don't have to take my word for it. It's that basically that's what the all the learned PhD professors said is at the end of it. They said, you know, that she'd done a great job. And
So
nice work, Melanie. We're just maybe a month or two away from having to call her.
What's up, Doc?
Melanie Bachman, PhD.
I think we're going to have to get her a door sign. Don't you get, I studied for 8 years and all I got was this lousy door sign for my office? Is maybe that?
Yeah. I don't know what we'll have. We'll have to come up with something creative. welcome to let us know what creative things we could do.
Well, that's true. Yeah.
We have a very smart audience. They'll come up with some good ideas.
Podcast at wholelife.church.
And Melanie doesn't listen to this, I'm sure.
I think she's going to catch us.
She listens to the episodes.
So that is big news, and we're super proud, and obviously I'm sure she is too, all the work that went into it. And for those of us that are close enough on a weekly basis to see the process and all of the work that she's put into it, it's just an amazing accomplishment, more so than I would have ever thought went into it. But okay. Next, I just wanted to say this. I mean, we're starting the Art of Worship series, and this week it was on drama. So, of course, the return of Craig and Stephanie.
Oh, good.
They dominated the conversation early on in the chat.
I'm sure they did.
And people were like, hey, does everyone know that we used to have a worship team? And, you know, we had a drama team.
Yeah.
And, you know, Tammy led that team. And we used to have stuff all the time. And we're like, some of us are like, yeah, we remember. Other people are like, oh, I didn't know. So I think it was a good week to bring them back. And get them, you know, and then start going, hey guys, if you want to be a part of it, you know, we have that. You can sign up. It's on the website. The link will be in the show notes today if you want to be a part of the drama team. And I would say even if maybe you're not local, I mean, they could use people with ideas for script writing.
Yeah.
There's a lot of things that you can get involved with on the website. It's wholelife.church/drama. And everything you need there, you can take that. So I'm like,
is that also? To the news side of our thing?
I know. I was like,
all the drama happening at
when we were deciding what that was, and I actually typed it out, I was like, this feels a little bit like the Inquirer, like, you know, Whole Life Minds want to know and kind of thing. And so that might be something we need to do at some point is get the be in the know kind of thing. All right, the other one is the return of Carolina Dave. This is 2 weeks in a row.
Oh, man, Dave.
And he said, I love the worship service. Number one, any service that utilizes Gail Murphy as a musical guest is awesome. True. I hope the music in heaven sounds like her. I'm like, I'm sure she'll have a part in that for sure. Number two, Whole Life needs a whole lot more of Stephanie and Craig. So just following
agree on that too.
Yeah, yeah, no arguments before. Number three, let's find out. Ooh, I bet Ken's going to like this one. Ken absolutely hit the nail on the head. See, I knew this was going to be all three. It was going to be top three. Drama is part of the art of worship. Drama is an integral instrument in God's majestic toolbox to reach the hardest of hearts. In the context of worship and a healthy relationship with God, drama is powerful. Drama is humanizing. And most important, drama is soul-saving.
I really like that. And just stop for a second.
Yeah.
Dave, I really like that. Drama is humanizing. I really like... I'm glad you said that. I think that's a really important bit that I don't know that I said as much in the sermon about, but that hits a nail on the head.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay. I can personally attest to this. I'm so excited that Whole Life is trying to start up a drama team again, and I look forward to seeing what they will do for God. As always, all of the Whole Life Family Church remains in my prayers. Carolina Dave.
So a little background on Carolina Dave, since I happen to know him.
Ah, yes.
He may have been my roommate in college. But Dave actually was very much a part of the Sunrise Easter program that happened at Southern for many years. He's scene director and very, very involved with that. So Dave, whenever you're ready to bring your talents to Central Florida.
Yeah. Like I just mentioned, I'm pretty sure someone from a distance that has good ideas can be a welcome member of the team, especially if you go to wholelife.church/drama. I think they list out about 8 things, and there might be more that you could think of that they didn't. And there's a place that you can fill out notes that goes directly to Melanie and I think Albert and a couple other people we have that form going to. So someone will be in touch once you fill it out and say, hey, I want to be a part of this. Of course, drama wasn't drama like dun 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 dun. Although you could use drama that way in
a play. I thought my first story was kind of that way. Dun 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 dun.
Dun 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 dun. Like crispy dun. I mean,
wow.
That was so. I didn't see that part of the story coming.
You didn't see that one coming?
And I'd never heard of John Kyler before.
Yeah.
Like this was a new story. And I like how you set it up. Ken said John Kyler had a big problem. He didn't like his church, full of corruption and not doing a good enough job of sharing the gospel with the world around it. And dun 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 dun, he was a denominational employee.
Yeah.
And you're like, wow, that is like the trifecta of the place you don't want to be in.
Yeah, it's a tough spot, I'm told.
And you know, similarities between church of old and his church, and I mean, and maybe this is not Randy putting words in Ken's mouth because I don't want to do that, but maybe you were inferring or at least allowing the space for the thought of, hey, maybe our church today, you know, still doesn't do all those things as well as they could. And maybe that's a reason that we need to have a drama team is to, like you said, you know, things that you can't really say out loud, but you can show and you can give a perspective through drama where it will be more easily digested or more easily or less, maybe less violently received in the brain. Was that what you were thinking at the end, or was it just like, hey, we're just trying those contrasts?
I don't know that there's ever been a time in church history, you know, leaving out denominations, just read through the Bible all the way, you know, to our present time, that there hasn't been issues within churches, within denominations, whatever. And so, definitely wanting to make the point that drama is just a really good tool of kind of cutting through, perhaps in less in your face than maybe a preaching might be. I'd say that maybe singing is another way of doing that as well. But we'll be talking about that this week. With that said, you know, drama has a way of making people. It humanizes people. It helps people see maybe angles and frames that they hadn't seen the story through before. And John Kyler's, I hadn't heard that story before I researched this sermon. And as I was researching theater, drama, in the church, I just happened to come across this story. And it just kind of hit me. Firstly, the man was incredibly brave. He kind of had an idea of where this could head, and he was willing to go there.
Right. That was a question I was going to ask. Like, there was no way he didn't know that this could be a result, just given the time period that he was in. Yeah. Okay.
He kind of had an idea, and it was a sacrifice that he was genuinely willing to make. And it's a really kind of a really neat untold story that, within maybe, I imagine in Scotland, it might be a little bit more well known than it is here in the US, but it was kind of just a neat little story that really, I think, points out the power of drama within a church framework.
Yeah. But what was the part I didn't understand, and maybe that's just a historical thing or a time period thing of when he was alive in the church as it was at that time. What about telling the story of Jesus running through those last days of his life and seemingly, the Last Supper and, the days, that day leading up to the crucifixion and the resurrection? What was so controversial? Because I was trying to think of it as you were preaching. Like, what was so controversial about that, that they were like, okay, that's it. You stepped over the line, and it was a big line, apparently.
Being that it happened in 1535, the details are a little hazy in church history, but however it went down, it was very, very, very obvious to those watching that he was basically comparing the people who crucified Christ to the church officials and leadership in his time.
That makes sense.
It was subtle, but not that subtle. And so people started, and the other part of it, the big thing that Kyler was fighting against was basically that at that point, the church was saying, you have to go through us to have access to Christ. Mm. You can't go directly to Christ yourself. And from the research I did, it really appears that this play really made the point that people can go straight to Christ, that there is no barrier, that you don't have to go through your denomination, you don't have to go through your local pastor, priest, or otherwise, that you can go straight to Christ. And it pointed those things out, and it really sparked a reformation. Keep in mind, in 1535, they didn't have Bibles the way that we do today.
That we do now, yeah.
And so some of the things that we kind of take for granted as just basic biblical knowledge, it just wasn't back then. And so for him to take the Bible and authentically portray it for what it was saying, and then in the same process to show the parallels between the people who are crucifying Christ and church leadership at that time, well, that was going to get you on the bad side of church leadership, as it would today. If you go out of your way to kind of, point things out, it doesn't always go over well. Although, fortunately, we live at this point in a country where people aren't being burnt to the stake for putting on a play.
Well, that was kind of my next question. Was, looking at that time, of course, we don't live in that time, but it's like, wow. I mean, okay, I get it. They looked bad. They looked power hungry. They looked controlling. They looked, really in a bad light, but burnt at the stake. I mean, and maybe that was probably a more common practice than maybe many of us realize could happen to someone. What would the same thing get you today? I mean, is there something that, or is it just like, hey, you just don't work for us anymore,
a lot of it depends on what part of the world you live in. So let's just talk about the part of the world that we live in right now. In the part of the world that we live in the United States, what's it going to get you? As a denominational ploy, if you speak out against the beliefs of your church, you're going to lose your employment.
Yeah.
That's probably the first thing. And people, you get denounced, before you get kicked out, there's a lot of hurtful stuff that kind of goes on sometimes. And, I really respect the fact that denominations do have a duty to stay the course on what they interpret the Bible to be saying and what truth is. So I get that. I get that if you have a denomination, there's a certain set of beliefs that you believe, and that's important. I have a certain set of beliefs that I believe and I think are important. With that said, one of the wonderful things about the United States has been that we have been able to be a country with people that have many different belief sets, and that while not always getting along perfectly, more or less this country has been a beacon of hope of what can happen, where people aren't being burned at the stake and being executed for having ideas that are contrary. And you know what? The fact of the matter is that there are consequences for beliefs either side of the road.
Absolutely.
And you have to decide, you know, if it is something you believe and you believe it's true, then it's worth putting your life on the line for. And that's kind of what tells me what you really believe, what you're willing to put your life on the line for.
I heard more than one person, and I had thought about it, but I probably hadn't thought about it maybe for as long or as maybe as much as some others, but just thinking about, you know, does that draw a foreshadowing of what might be to come, as, you know, if we believe at the end of the world and, you know, before Jesus comes back, that, you know, I mean, maybe not burning at the stake, but that seems a little, a little archaic, but
yeah, but I will say that there's a lot of language going around out there right now of, I mean, that's really kind of concerning, and I wouldn't say it's coming from one particular side of things, but there's some really aggressive language out in the public sphere from people that talks about, you know, that people who disagree with me don't deserve to have the same rights I do, or you know, implies some violence to it, and I hate hearing that, because it seems to me that's one of when you talk about what, you know, the United States, one of the things that I've appreciated and that I appreciate about the United States is that sense of religious freedom, that I get to believe what I want to believe, you get to believe what you want to believe. And you know, within denominational employment, there can be and even within, you know, a church friend, there can be some consequences. I see that a little bit as different.
Yeah.
But, you know, nobody gets, you know, nobody loses, should be, you know, tortured or losing their life over what they believe. And so I think that that's something that we ought to really, for all those listening to this podcast, I think that that's one of the things we really need to be careful about in our discourse is violent rhetoric towards those that don't believe the same thing that we do. It's one thing to disagree with somebody. It's another thing to say things that would promote, you know, physical violence and even psychological violence.
Yeah. I think there's obviously in America with that freedom brings all kinds of, you know, differing, opposing, even extremely opposing views on religion and different subjects, but to give the grace to say, look, that's your freedom to do. That's my freedom to do. You don't have to like what that person thinks or believes, but I want the grace and I want that protection for myself. So why wouldn't I want that for somebody else? And I think it's easy to forget that, but that was something that I saw just pop through and just made me think about, you know, there's probably not going to be less of it moving forward. There'll probably be more as we continue on.
And I think that's why it's really important to know what you believe. Because clearly for John Kyler, the stakes were high. And he really had to know what he believed to know whether you're going to, because usually what would happen in those situations is that people would be given a chance to recant, to say, I take that back. I'm sorry, that was in bad taste. And there would be a lesser penalty than going to the stake, because that was, by all accounts, even then, that was considered not a particularly great way to go. And so while I didn't see this in the literature that I studied, I suspect that John Kyler was given the opportunity to recant. His play was in 1535. He was burnt at the stake in 1538. And so I suspect over those 3 years, he was given opportunity to say, hey, you want to take that back? You want to?
I was a little surprised that it was that long before they. I mean, not that I'm basing that off of anything, but it just seemed like goodness. If you were upset and you were, I mean, maybe it just took time to travel to enough people to get them enough to, you know, upset at this.
Well, sometimes like in that, and again, my research, I couldn't nail down a couple things, but one of the things I suspect happened here was because it was a play, you couldn't really say he was actually saying that. And so what you had to do is then kind of take him to trial. You kind of had to follow after him and pick up other things that he was saying. And I think that's kind of the road that he went down. But John Cuyler decided it was worth giving his life for. And I guess the question is, what do you think? What do you think that you believe in?
Yeah.
Enough. Oof. That you think it's, you know, do you, what human rights, what biblical foundations do you think, hey, that's something that I'm not going to do a take back on no matter what? And we live in a society where we've been, you know, my parents, my grandparents, my great-grandparents, we've all been spared from having to make those kind of tough decisions. I mean, I think probably some of the toughest decisions most of us have ever had to make came when it came to like vocation, employment, when we had, you know, in my instance, when I was working in news, I had to make a decision about whether I would work on, you know, from sundown Saturday night to, or Friday night to sundown Saturday night, which was a decision that I decided. I said, I'm willing not to take a job if it's going to require me to do that. And that can be a tough decision, particularly when you're trying to take care of a family, but it's, I think it probably pales in comparison to being told, or you can be burned at the stake if you don't, or you know, you're going to forfeit your life in general. So,
either way, that doesn't seem like it comes close, but also, like you said, maybe some of the biggest things we've had to deal with.
Yeah.
What do you think Ezekiel believed? Because I'm listening and I don't know. I've read through the Bible before and I'm sure I've read this, but not enough to make it stick, or it hasn't been a story told maybe enough. And to take a brick, draw the city of Jerusalem on it, build the siege works around the city, make a year and a half worth of food, cook it over human waste, and then against argument, okay, fine, cook it over animal waste. Oh, my word. Now lay down on your left side, stay there for 390 days. Turn over on your right side, stay there for another 40 days. What? I mean, I love the fact that it's like, this is drama because here you are.
Yeah.
People have to be going like, what in the world? That Ezekiel... I mean, we know pastors are a little off center, you know, whatever, but this guy, I mean, he's way out in left field or right field, whatever. What is he doing? What was the deal behind this? I know you said to go look it
there's
up.
There's so much to unpack there. That's like its own probably four part series in there that's, you know, with all the material that's there. And the point that I really wasn't trying to get into was the theological significance of everything that was going on there. More of... Look, God asked people to do drama. He did. It's there. I mean, it doesn't get any more visual and dramatic. Well, it actually does when Hosea is told to go marry a prostitute, which is something I didn't bring up in our family session of...
Or Jeremiah.
Or Jeremiah's
underwear.
Go get
the loincloth and don't take it off for a while.
A while. And then go bury it in a cleft between two rocks by a river. Come get it. You know, sometime later, it's moldy, it's nasty, and...
It wasn't great when you put it there. How could this be any better?
And in that case, God basically says, it's a fast... I just don't know. People who want to make the Bible some G-rated document, good luck. Because this, you know, and by the way, if you have kids listening, we've already kind of started to go there, but... You know, this is your opportunity to decide what you want to do. But this loincloth is underwear, right? And God says, I put my people as my loincloth. Now, think of, he does. He says, and basically he says, and you guys have gone and become absolutely disgusting. And you think about, and he said, I wore you close to some of the most important parts of my body, some of the most intimate parts of my body, and look at you. And that's what he says to Ezekiel. And I told you I wasn't going to get into the deep theology on these things, but go read it.
Yeah.
There's some, I mean, there is some stuff in the Bible where God's pretty straightforward about and vivid well, in his descriptions of things. I mean, there's another point where he asks Isaiah to run around naked for a while.
Yeah.
I mean, can you imagine that? Can you just imagine me coming to church and being like, hey guys, God told me that for the next week, 2 weeks, he wants me to run around this place naked.
And he wanted me to show up as just Ken.
Just Ken.
Ken, nothing to hide. Oh my.
This is some crazy stuff for us to contemplate that God is asking these prophets to do. And yet I believe God does it for a purpose and he does it for a reason. He's trying to shock these people into recognizing some important truths that they're missing
out. That they're missing out.
And they're not, I guess God must have felt there was no other way to get their attention. So,
but everybody understands the thing that makes it, I mean, yeah, it's weird and it's a little, I don't know what word I'd use, but everyone understands underwear. Everyone understands that, you know, like, hey, we have to bathe. We get funkified. Your body smells. And yet God's using that in a way to go, look, I trusted you by putting you, like you said, next to my most intimate parts of my body. And you guys just ruined everything. Like, you stink. You're horrible. And that he uses it in a way, it resonates with me like that so hard because I often think to myself when I can't understand what God is doing to me, maybe through me, what his plan for me is, yeah. Or a situation where it's like, God, if you could just make it, man, just make it obvious, yeah. You know, put it on a 2x4, smack me up in the forehead, put it in reverse. So when I pull my hair back and look in the mirror, I can go, oh. Please stop doing X, Y, and Z, signed God. Then, and here, that's essentially what he's doing in these cases where it's like, hey, we're not mincing words. We're getting right down to it.
Well, it's interesting, you know, in the parable that I referenced about the rich man and Lazarus, one of the things that, you know, the rich man basically says to Father Abraham, who, you know, Lazarus is in the bosom of Abraham. If you're not familiar with that story, go look it up. But basically, one of the things that the rich man says is, hey, let me go back and warn my brothers about behaving the way I have, because I don't want them to wind up in the same hot place that I'm in. And Abraham says something just absolutely fascinating to me. He says, if they have the law and the prophets, if they don't believe that, even if somebody comes back from the dead, they won't believe.
Hmm.
And it's interesting. We all want to be smacked in the head. But the interesting thing is that biblically, just look through all the different examples, some pretty incredible things happen. And even 2x4s of the forehead don't seem to be adequate at times to get people to wake up and say, hey, this isn't the way things are supposed to be. This isn't what we should be doing. And, you know, it's just these, and he's right, because Jesus tells the story and then he comes back from the dead and people don't believe.
And they don't believe. Yeah, no, I think all of these different ones that you gave, the examples that you gave, I've started to go back and start to read these and try to digest them because I think—
Because you knew you had podcasts coming up.
Well, and I think they're all super interesting.
They are, aren't they?
And there's so much depth there, but sometimes, and I've seen this in my own life, God has asked some weird thing, not necessarily weird things, but weird, like timing wise, like why now? Why would you do this? Or I've already been here before, like taking me back to a job I hated for another run at it. It was like, God, what are you doing?
Yep.
I have applied at 1,000 different jobs and this is the only opportunity you're giving me. And you know, it isn't sufficient in so many ways. It's not, you know, I don't like it. It doesn't pay enough. It's people I don't like to work with for the most part.
Let's clarify. This is not the job you're doing
right now.
Just making sure.
Yeah. And it's like, but at the end of it, you then look back and go, wow, I didn't see the parts of me that needed this. The non-fun should have been the 2x4 that said, look, you're not having fun. You're all the things you're saying. Yeah, that's true. But you're still missing this piece and you're not doing it and you're not bringing yourself to where you need to be till finally you're just like, okay, I give up and let God do what you want. And all of a sudden it's like, oh, that wasn't so weird after all. So maybe the loincloth isn't as weird as we think. I'll get back to you on that one because it still sounds weird.
I'm going to go with it's weird.
I love the part where you said Jesus told stories that weren't true. And I mean, it's almost like you could just feel the gasp in the room.
Most of Jesus' stories were true or based on things. But as Seventh-day Adventist, you don't.
That's a tough. Yeah,
you don't get to say they all are.
Yeah. Well, and I think
if you want to stick with Seventh-day Adventist beliefs.
But how cool is it though to think of it? And I get why people would be uncomfortable with thinking, oh, what do you mean? Jesus is the way, the truth, and the life. And how could this be? But also, how cool is it that Jesus took the drama or the stories of his day and was like, yeah, that's a good story and I'm not going to waste it. I'm going to flip it and turn it because you can understand what you think you understand. And then when I say it, you're going to go, but wait a minute, here's where I thought I was supposed to be. But now I'm over here going, what's this? What are you talking about?
Yeah.
And I just think that is super creative and just part of that creator God that we see doing whatever he wants with making our world, making us. And I just thought that was fun to think about.
Yeah.
Like what he could do with, even with what the world around him gave him to work with. And then finally, man, the story about the stage director and her son that you closed out the message with, that makes me feel like the podcast. Like, you know, we talk about the message, we bring in personal stories and we talk about what things mean to us or what we're searching for. And just having letting the Holy Spirit, you know, praying over each episode, letting the Holy Spirit, you know, put into ears what it needs them to hear for the kingdom. And that was just a really powerful, like watching their grandson look all over the stage for mom. And then, I mean, the Holy Spirit having a moment to be like, hey guys, you know what you know who the son is in this story? Hey, that's you guys. You know who mom is? And it's like, wow.
Yeah.
That was almost not even knowing the people behind that story, that was a bit of a heartstring puller. Just like, whoa, that's making the hair and my arms stand
up. It was a powerful moment for us. I mean, I don't think anybody invited anybody thinking any change was going to happen because of a little Easter play that we were doing. But, and I say little, is about 70 to 80, 90 people involved in it. It's a huge production for that area. But the point is, I didn't think that. And we did that same play in a different place for 2 years running. And, you know, there's the aspect of how it reaches other people, right? So I didn't have time to say, put this anecdote in, but podcasts, you always get the extra here.
You always get the extra, yeah.
But one of the things I wanted to say was doing the same scene that I was talking about, we were doing it previous to this and at another place. And one of my good friends, Royce, just always took that resurrection scene as far as it would go. He always wear this stupid fake beard around the stage and run around the stage, hugging everybody and jumping up and down and being excited that Jesus come back in this final scene of the play. And, the first year we did this together, I thought it was kind of funny and it was just a Royce thing to do and didn't think much about it. And that year he was killed in a car accident. And, obviously it was traumatic, but we did the play again the next, year, and it, had been several months since the accident. And I'll never forget being out on that stage and having this moment where I looked around for Royce.
And he wasn't there.
Because he was always going to come and give you a hug, right? And he wasn't there, but I remember more than a few of us in the cast were kind of crying. Hopefully the audience thought they were happy tears. But just this realization that when Christ comes back, that Royce jumping around will be there and that we'll have that with him again. And just having that, it's just this deep thing that, and I've often had people who play the people who are being healed by Jesus in a scene, or that they really experience, they're obviously don't necessarily have a physical thing that's being healed, but they'll often talk to me about how moving it is as they kind of think about the healing that Christ can bring into life, and they see healing in other aspects of their life, and they contemplate what it was like to be there, to experience that, and they have to act it out. It's powerful, and it's just kind of like when we, you know, it's one thing to view it, it's another thing to have to actually act it out.
Yeah.
And it really takes you to a deeper, more meaningful place, because you really have to think about it very deeply. It's kind of like writing a sermon, you know. It's one thing to listen to the sermon, it's another thing to write the sermon yourself, to do the research, because, you know, I can only put a small fraction of the research that I've done into a sermon.
Yeah.
And even in podcasts, you're not getting everything that I have taken the time to do. And when you think about it, it's, you just get so much out of it. And I always watch, it's always fascinating to me to watch the spiritual growth that happens in people when they do some of these passion plays, and when they do Christian plays in general, and spend time thinking about, you know, about Christ and what he's done for us and these biblical characters.
The Chosen.
Hey.
Watch some of the behind the scenes, or the one on, maybe more the one on one interviews that they do with certain cast members that weren't even Christian or aren't Christian, and go, there is something to this story that will change you, even if that's not your belief system. So I think you're right on with that. We only had one question. I know we answered it, but I wanted at least for people, because that when we read it, it made so much sense. It was actually our online host, Matthew, who said, so God changes things to be effective. The one thing I'm a bit confused about is this, and maybe this is the wrong context, but help me understand. What about the scripture that says God is the same today, yesterday, in the future, etc.? How does that fit in the context of drama? And I think what we just talked about with God being able to take other stories, and he's flexible. God is the ultimate creator, and he can create anything from anything. Yeah. So I think that's always been who he is, and probably obviously who he's going to be. I love that picture of him, though.
I always like to use this metaphor, and it's not a perfect metaphor. So if you see some deficiencies in it, just bear with me here.
Okay.
But it's kind of like our parents. You know, we have a picture of who our parents are when we're 3 years old. We have a picture of who our parents are when we're 10 years old. We have a picture of who we think our parents are at 20. Then when you have kids, you have a new picture of who your parents were.
Yep.
And then as your parents get into their later years, you have another picture of who your parents are. Have they changed? In human beings, yes, there is change that happens in your parents. But if you go ahead and use the metaphor in terms of how parenting occurs, parents parent differently. They may have the same core values, but they'll parent in a different way at different ages that they do. And I think that for me as a metaphor is that God doesn't change. His principles, his character, that doesn't change. But the way that God relates to each culture and each era and each group of people and each individual is different, because God's ultimate goal is to see each one of us accepting him choosing eternal life that he's already given to us. It's already ours. And so that's what God wants. And so he changes his methodologies to meet the person, but he doesn't change. And I don't know if that helps at all, Matthew, but, I remember it used to frustrate me so much that my dad never had a problem giving me a spanking, but my brother, he just wouldn't do it very much, if at all. And I remember one time I said something to him about it, and he said, well, that's not effective with your brother. And I said, what do I have to do to make it not effective with me? The point was, my dad, he didn't love my brother or me more than one or the other, but the point was and as a parent, I kind of see that, or I do see that. My children are two different human beings.
Yeah.
And I can't, treating them the same isn't fair, because if you treat them the same, you're missing out on the fact that they're two different people with
Someone's getting shortchanged in that.
You know, each child has their strengths, and they're the things that aren't strengths that you need to work with. And so I think God works exactly the same way as a good parent, that God again, principles stay the same, but he works with each person with where they're at in a way that they can understand and that makes sense to the culture and time that they live in.
Well, I loved what you said, the word methodology. One of my favorite people on the planet, Bill Crofton, used to tell us all the time through God Encounters and some other ministries that we were working together with him on, is I'm not here to change theology, but I'm here to change methodology, because that's what Jesus did. Yep. And he's like, theology doesn't change, but how you do it, the methodology is what we need to be focused on and making sure we're being effective. So I totally resonate with that. All right. Let's see. Next week, Art of Worship, part two.
Music.
Part two.
Music.
Music. Oh.
I don't know.
So how come Gail wasn't next week for music? Is that just the way it worked out?
I think the calendar worked out a little bit that way, but we also have some pretty special music.
What? 2 weeks
up.
In a row?
Yeah.
Uh-oh.
So we're not having a concert in the evening.
Okay.
But there's going to be some good music.
But like from everything I heard, I was not able to attend the concert. My parents were in from out of town. And so I spent my evening with them. It was time well spent. But so music for this week. And then how many are we doing total? Is this five?
Four.
Four.
So we have music. And then after that, we're going to actually have an artist talk to us about.
Oh, are we going to divulge that now that we have a confirmation? Or are we going to let them hang for another week?
I think I'm okay with, what do you think? Should I?
I don't know. Maybe we should.
I just can't wait to get that person in here on the podcast.
I know, right? He's been, I just said he. Well, it's a he. We'll say it's a he. He has been on the podcast before, a couple occasions. So some of you who've been longtime listeners will recognize, and if you watch online, you will definitely recognize him. So,
So this particular sermon will be really fun because it's going to come from the artist perspective of the art of worship. And so I think that'll be very.
And then the final one, what did you say?
And then the final one is on architecture.
Architecture. And anything special planned for that?
I think we have, we're trying to line up a couple different interviews with some interior designers and maybe some architects to talk about how architecture influences us.
I know a pretty awesome interior designer.
Yeah, but, I've heard that.
Just saying. Anyway. Yeah. All right, guys. You know what? I'm really excited. I really enjoyed this message and I'm looking forward to this. And then after we're done with this one, how close are we to the summer series, The Voices of Whole Life? That's coming
first
up.
First Sabbath in June.
So that's right. That follows this.
Yeah, immediately after.
See, guys, you got a whole summer of. We're going to have some guests on the podcast in this one, at least one that we know of. And then we're going to have in the summer series, you know, that's always in. It's my favorite one, but I know it's a lot of your favorites as well, because we always get a lot of questions. You get to meet new people you probably don't know. So lots of good things to look forward to.
Some really great people lined up too.
Oh man, I'm excited. I don't know.
I haven't seen it, but I'm going to be careful about that.
Yeah, I know we probably should at least wait for Melanie to be here, right?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Melanie, we missed you. We'll be looking forward to having you back next week. And then maybe next week you can tease those people, or maybe the first one or something about what's going on. Cool.
We'll do it.
All right. That's going to do it for this week, guys. Thanks for listening and have an amazing week.